Good afternoon and welcome to On The Radar right here on Eagle FM. I am your host Ndafa Happy Juju. Now it's Wednesday, midweek in Namibia. The pace is picking up, the headlines are piling up, and for many of us, it's the moment where we stop, take stock and ask, where are we headed and what are we not paying enough attention to? From the heart of Windhoek to the corners of Ketmanshoop, from Rundu's riverbanks to the dunes of Swakopmund, On The Radar brings you the stories that cut through the noise. We don't just tell you what's happening, we interrogate why it's happening, who it affects, and what it means for the future of this country. Today we are looking at the systems behind the promises. Is financial inclusion more than a buzzword? Are communities really feeling the impact of national development plans? And what does participation mean in a country where access is still unequal? Whether you're in a taxi, on campus, in the office, or tending the land, you're part of the conversation. You can stream us live on the Eagle FM app or website. And don't forget to connect with us on WhatsApp, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. This is On The Radar, where Namibia's power, policy, and people come face to face. Let's get right into it. The Bank of Namibia has officially launched its Financial Inclusion Awareness Campaign, a nationwide initiative aimed at removing systemic barriers that hinder many citizens from participating meaningfully in the economy. The campaign was unveiled by Deputy Governor Ebson Wanguta, who stressed that inclusive financial systems are not a luxury, but a national necessity. True monetary stability cannot exist without meaningful economic participation by all our citizens, Wanguta stated. Financial exclusion means a significant challenge in Namibia, with many still lacking access to affordable and formal financial services. At the heart of the campaign is a vision to transform access to finance for underserved communities, including farmers, students, pensioners, and informal sector workers. Wanguta explained that financial inclusion goes beyond policy. It's a tool for national development. When a farmer gains access to credit, when a student can save securely, when a pensioner is shielded from exploitation, we create not just financial stability, but dignity, opportunity, and resilience, he said. Now, according to the Bank of Namibia, 78% of adult Namibians now have access to some form of financial service. However, the bank cautions that such figures, while encouraging, do not fully capture the lived experiences of millions who remain excluded from meaningful financial participation. Now, before we get into a conversation thoroughly with somebody on just what this financial inclusion, what financial inclusion means for every Namibian and perhaps for them as well, let's listen to the Deputy Governor of the Bank of Namibia, that is Ebson Wanguta.
Inclusion is about igniting growth and development, especially for low-income households. When a farmer gains access to credit, when a student can save securely, when a pensioner is shielded from exploitation, we create not just financial stability.
Now, in his opening address at the Third Energy Transition Working Group, Electricity and Energy Minister Dr. Jose Nsorabo-Hopa said, and I quote, the transition to a low...
...a cornerstone of reducing inequality, tackling poverty, and securing a lasting peace and stability in a nation. Thus, today, we launch a campaign that goes beyond policy implementation. It is a national commitment to ensuring that every Namibian can participate fully in our economy. We can be proud of the progress we have made. About 78% of adult Namibians now have got access to some form of financial services. But statistics alone do not tell the full story. Behind each percentage point, there are real people. There are entrepreneurs, there are farmers, There are students, there are pensioners, many of whom they are still constrained by barriers that we need to remove. Access must go deeper than a bank account. It must open doors to real and meaningful participation in the financial system. There are essentially three pillars of financial inclusion. Financial inclusion at its core rests on three fundamental pillars that we must strengthen at the same time. The first pillar is that of access. Ensuring that every Namibian can reach and utilize formal financial services from basic banking and savings to credit and insurance. This means addressing both physical and digital barriers that prevent participation. The second pillar is that of financial literacy. Equipping our citizens with the knowledge and skills to navigate financial products confidently and make informed decisions. In our increasingly digital economy, this literacy has become not just beneficial, but also essential for economic security. The third pillar is that of consumer protection. Ensuring strong safeguards against fraud, against exploitation and unfair practices so that no Namibian is left vulnerable. These pillars are all interconnected. Access without understanding leads to vulnerability. Protection without access entrenches exclusion. Our approach must be comprehensive and coordinated. Ladies and gentlemen, our commitment to financial inclusion is evidenced by concrete actions and measurable progress. The 2017 national financial inclusion rate of 78%, while encouraging, merely represent our starting point, but not our destination. We are currently working closely with Namibia Statistics Agency on a comprehensive financial inclusion survey that will provide us with an updated, granular data to guide our policy decision and action moving forward. This month, we also launch our digital financial literacy booklet, developed with the Financial Literacy Initiative. This tool that we have launched will help Namibians from mobile money users to time digital investors understand, navigate, and protect themselves in our increasingly digital financial landscape. We are also advancing significant regulatory reforms, including the development of an instant payment system. This system will create fast, safe, and interoperable payment infrastructure, ensuring that financial services are efficient, they are inclusive, and built around the rights. Ladies and gentlemen, the imperative for this campaign becomes very clear when we consider the lived experience of a fellow citizen. Consider the informal trader whose thriving business cannot grow because traditional collateral rules lock her out of credit. the graduate with an innovative idea, but no pathway to seek funding. The pensioner who falls prey to scams because he lacks digital literacy. The woman running a small enterprise in Kaputura faces the same fundamental barriers as a farmer in the Kavango region seeking seasonal credit. Our solution, therefore, must be as diverse as the communities we serve. Yet, while diverse, they must be unified in the commitment to inclusion. This campaign represents a very collaborative effort that extends far beyond the Bank of Namibia. We are proud to work alongside the Ministry of Finance.
Now, speaking about financial inclusion or financial literacy and awareness, we're going to speak to a young person to get their feel and also just their wisdom that they're going to share with us on how perhaps the Bank of Namibia can help implement this. Now, we're speaking to Rauna Hamukoto, NUST student and youth advocate. Rauna, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to have you on the Radar News Analysis.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Rauna, when we're talking about financial inclusion or financial literacy for the average Namibian people, what, in your opinion, would you say is financial inclusion for them? What should it include? And, of course, we're talking about young people. We're talking about the elderly that are often, every now and then, duped into activities where people are being fraudulent and taking their money. What would you say?
I would say when it comes to financial literacy, I think the main objective is just to educate people on how to use funds effectively, how to get funds effectively, and how to actually prevent fraudulent activities from happening, or how to suspect that a fraudulent activity is about to happen and what to do next.
Yeah. How to suspect a fraudulent activity is about to happen and what to do next. And actually coming to my mind, I'm thinking it's not just about the youth. It's about every Namibian out there. You know how something could actually be trying to, something might be prompting you to say, okay, look, you need to be very vigilant now. You need to be very cautious. Somebody's about to take your money. But we're often so quite slow. What is that you would want to be included when we talk about financial inclusion? What can they perhaps include for us Namibians to be able to say, yes, this campaign has really reached to all of us?
Firstly, I think we also have to look back at why people commit fraudulent activities, you know. They are also trying to find financial stability, you know, and they are not very aware of many, or they are not highly educated on the many ways that you can actually get financial stability. So it often leads them to start fraudulent activities, taking from other people's hard-earned money. So that's firstly. So I think in order to educate, in order to or to remove this fraudulent activities, it is important also that we educate the people committing these fraudulent activities. But what they're trying to do is also just find financial stability, you know. So financial literacy will come in the aspect of that everyone should be educated on how to effectively or get financial stability firstly. But looking at the fraudulent activities that are visible or that need to be recognized, I think organizations such as the Bank of Namibia should actually issue on how to see, for instance, false bank notes.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, a lot of people have been creating counterfeit bank notes, and not everybody knows how to tell if a bank note is real or fake. You know, education needs to not only be in Bantu, because a lot of times the activities of financial literacy only often happen in towns, you know, but the fraudulent activities mainly happen in the rural areas, you know, in the villages. Our elders are being scammed.
Mm.
So we need to take this initiative back to the roots.
I hear you. Now, for some people, they say financial inclusion, or actually the bank of the deputy governor of the Bank of Namibia says it's the responsibility of every Namibian out there. Are we perhaps also doing enough in terms of just trying to educate our elderly parents or elderly grandparents, and just try to, or just every Namibian out there, perhaps you are in the rural side and you know more in terms of financial education. Are we perhaps also just doing the little that we perhaps can, or perhaps we need to do more?
I think we are doing very little, to be frank. I really want to be frank. I don't think that youth are doing the exceptionally well when it comes to educating on financial literacy, because I think it's mainly the youth that are busy with fraudulent activities, you know, and especially scamming the elders, because they know the elders do not know best. But we as youth, we know a lot. We don't only know a lot through the initiatives hosted by different organizations such as the Bank of Namibia, but we know a lot through social media platforms, you
actually
know? We learn through that, and a lot of elders don't have access to that. So I think we as a youth, we need to do better, man.
Yeah,
we need we need to actually have the humanity within us, because I feel like a lot of us, when it comes to the the Gen Z, Alpha Gen, and the millennials, we have lost a lot of humanitarian activities, you know. We lost humanity as a country, as a population, as a generation. So we need to bring back shame to allow us to actually educate people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Rauna, for making time for us right here on the Reader Analysis. Or perhaps your final words that you would want to give to the Namibian out there before even financial education comes their way. I mean, we do have really platforms where we can also educate ourselves. Sometimes we let those things just go by. And when we do suffer victim, we wish we had known better. So perhaps maybe just your final words to the people.
I think my final words will definitely have to go to our leaders. Specifically, would be the governor of the Bank of Namibia, be the manager of SNB Bank, Windhoek, any other bank, or anybody that is trying to create financial awareness. I think it is quite big for people to say now that it's important to include youth in the roundtables, and I think it's a problem because everybody is trying to say, oh, you guys are the future generation, the future leaders and whatnot. But the fact is that how many young people do you see sitting at a table that is talking about financial literacy?
Actually, you know?
So firstly, I think it's important that we start bringing young people to the table, because they bring fresh perspectives and innovative ideas that can help shape a more dynamic economy. It also allows young people to be groomed at an early stage for them in order to become future leaders, because you can't have a future leader who is financially illiterate. Another thing is, if we are the future workforce and consumers, it is important that our input is crucial for the sustainable growth. Involving us boosts financial literacy, which in turn creates a more financial savvy population, which I think is what Namibia is trying to grow into as an economy. And finally, it fosters a sense of ownership and responsibility among us as youth, which is great for long-term economic stability.
Rauna,
that's my final words.
Okay. Rauna, those are very insightful words that you pointed out right there. Something that I will take from it is that we want to see more young people at this discussions, at this, when we're talking about financial literacy and financial inclusion. How about get the voice of the youth themselves? What is it that they think will work? Because of course, things are no more the same as it was back in the days when they were youth. But I do appreciate how you share sentiments with us right here on the Reader Analysis, Rauna.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. And now let's pause right here. You are tuned in on the Reader Analysis. We still have much more coming your way. And of course, we're still interrogating financial inclusion and financial literacy. What does it mean for every ordinary Namibian? And what is it that you can play as from your side, play your part to ensure that you are well educated when it comes to financial literacy? I mean, so many of us have to deal with, of course, finances, but so many times I think we make mistakes that could be avoided. So stay tuned and find out when we come back from the commercial break.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. You are still tuned into On The Radar Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now, right now, I'm joined in studio by NAST lecturer, mathematics lecturer, Yvonne Nkale. Good afternoon, Ms. Yvonne, and welcome to On The Radar Analysis.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me this afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, today we're talking about the Bank of Namibia's launch of Financial Inclusion Awareness Campaign. And it is a nationwide initiative that is apparently aimed at removing systemic barriers that hinder many citizens from participating meaningfully in the economy. And when we're talking about the economy also, we cannot forget to talk about numbers. And you being a mathematics lecturer, I couldn't think of someone better than you to talk about this. So, Ms. Yvonne, when we're talking about financial inclusion, of course, we still see a lot of Namibian people suffering in terms of finances. What is it that you think should be included when it comes to financial education and financial inclusion?
Amazing. First of all, what we need to understand here is the financial inclusion, which is a process of ensuring that each and every individual, it doesn't matter whether it's age, educational background, have to have special product. This can be bank account, saving, loans. It can be any payment or the remittance facility. So this is very important, and it doesn't matter at which age. Here we are looking at youth, we are looking at elderly. So all these people need to be part of the campaign, or they must be included in this.
Yeah.
So if every Namibian been catered into this, as also Mr. Ebson said it, this will reduce poverty, and it also promote economic growth. So especially youth, they need the financial skills on how to take care of their finances, and this needed to be taken at the early stage, especially from schools, because nowadays we have a lot of, online facility where students are getting funds, for example, from YouTube, from anywhere, and even the bank now. Student, they are getting small loans, either study loans or anything.
Fact, now the National Youth Fund is going to be unveiled in this August, where youth are going to actually get funds and loans for them to start up their businesses. And that, of course, perhaps not today's topic, but you can get also right into that.
Wow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So, and this is what we are talking about. So this campaign is really good for them, so that when they get these loans now, they don't just go and squander the loans or eat up the money, but make maximum use of it and empower Namibia's economy, because we really need Namibia to be up there. When somebody here, you are coming from Namibia, they know very well that the economy of Namibia is powerful, and this is what also our president wants us to do. And you see, it's just so good. And also, with our elder, with this campaign going on, it also help our elderly, or let me say, it save our elderly from bullying. Because, for example, nowadays our elderly, they are what they have been abused. You see, this is what you call vulnerability of financial abuse when it comes to our elderly, because some of our elders now, they don't have even banks. When they get their money, when they get home, some of their grandchildren, their children, they abuse them financially. They took their money. But if all this financial inclusion include all the people, or let me say Namibian people, regardless of the age, at least it will help our, it protect our elder from exploitation. From their people, and also give them know how much they have, because nowadays our elders, they just go there, get their money is taken, and they don't even save again. They don't have anything.
Yeah.
And also with our youth, it will keep our youth or it will help our youth to save.
Exactly.
You see, even our time, our time. We with the small that we're getting, let me say, government loans, we because of this because of this campaign that were not introduced to us, we couldn't save. And if this teaching or this campaign goes in, it also puts something in our youth to start saving, to start knowing that, okay, with also the loans, small business coming up, at least they can be responsible and know that at least we need to save up and we need to work hard and, all those things.
Yeah.
And also it gives them also skills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Ms. Yvonne Kale, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader Analysis. And of course, I sure hope that every Namibian will be able to do their mathematics right and make sure that their finances are in order.
Amazing.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. And there you had it from Yvonne Kale. She's a mathematics lecturer at NAST, also sharing just her sentiment in terms of financial inclusion or financial literacy for every Namibian. Now, of course, we do hope that this will this campaign will reach to every Namibian, whether in the rural area, in urban areas, wherever they may be, because honestly, knowledge is power. And when our Namibian people are educated, you and I can make better decisions. Most times we make wrong decisions because we are not knowledgeable on certain things. But with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we shall be bringing you yet news that we need to interrogate. Stay with us. Now, you can also partake in the news bulletin. 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
Lipura nenge no wapwa eva tere ulikoni mandu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe udite opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala kunongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebi toda njuka okupitira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special angeza shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushenjife nawa nukumona oijabweli nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora itatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa vera hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not the...
Welcome back. You are tuned into On The Radar Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now we're joined in studio by Sean Jordan Uisev, and he is currently at the Unum Cultural Festival that opens its doors today. It's going to be ongoing, and it's been an inception that has been celebrated by Unum over the years. Now, a pleasure to have you, Sean Jordan Uisev, right here on Eagle FM.
Thank you so much for having me, Happy.
Mm-hmm. Sean, I know you're currently at the Unum Cultural Festival. First and foremost, why is so important for every Namibian to continuously, or for Unum itself and other universities, to continuously have or host cultural festivals in order for the youth and every Namibian to stay rooted to their culture?
Well, first of all, good day to our listeners listening right now. So the Unum Cultural Festival and having festivals of this type is quite important because it does promote cultural diversity within the institution. Mm-hmm. Currently, according to our latest numbers, Unum has has about 57 to 58 countries represented throughout all of its campuses.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, all of their cultures are also represented. So you'll see cultures from all over the world here. And why this is so important is that it really brings about a bridge where people can actually learn about different cultures, about cultural values, and about the different ethos that each culture represents. Also, it makes it so that it shows that Namibia as a country itself is quite diverse and is a melting pot of so many different people, cultures, creeds, backgrounds, and all of that.
Mm-hmm. So give us a heads up of what we can expect for those who perhaps will be interested in visiting the cultural festival. What is it that is on display right now, and who are the important people, or perhaps, let me say, guests of honor at the festival?
Right. So it is a 4-day event, I believe. So from today until Saturday. So today was the opening.
Yeah.
It's currently happening as we speak. But what we first did was we went on a parade through Independence Avenue at around 7:30 in the morning until 9 to introduce the cultural festival to the citizens of Windhoek and also to promote the Miss and Miss Unam pageantry. After that, we came back to campus where we are now at the UNAM main campus stadium. And we have had different cultural performances. We've had the Chinese Society, the Kwekwekova Society, the Zambezi Society doing cultural performances. And we've had speeches by the Vice Chancellor, Dr. Kenneth Matengu, and Honorable Dino Balotti, the Deputy Minister of Youth, Sports, and Culture. So we've had quite a bit happen today. So the aim of today is to open the stalls, right, so that people can start selling the cultural food that they are selling, and people can mingle and really just vibe together. So what's going to happen today and tomorrow, Friday and Saturday, is that the stalls will be open. So people can intermittently come in and out of the stadium with whatever food they want to buy or whatever. Thursday, there's gonna be a night fire bonfire sort of situation happening at Mudam campus, where they'll be talking about like cultural history of different cultures, because like for example in the Oshiwa Herero culture and in the Damranama culture, like fire is a very symbolic thing, so that's what they're gonna be doing there. Friday is gonna be the Miss and Miss UNAM pageantry, where we've already had the preliminary round. We already have 10 finalists of both women and men, and we're gonna find out who's gonna be our next Mr. and Miss UNAM. And then on Saturday we're gonna have the final day. It'll be the closing day where we'll be having a music show, where we're gonna have different artists. I believe King TV is one of the featured artists that will be coming through. And it'll be just a festival, a full-on festival of music, drinks, vibes, that sort of thing. So yeah.
Now, over the years, as you begin to notice, things are quite evolving. I mean, you see interracial relationships, and could you say maybe, now that it's coming to my mind, I'm thinking maybe things like this, such as cultural festival, are the ones that actually kind of like unite us and not divide us, for us young people to also see that, hey, hold on, doesn't necessarily mean that I can only marry from my tribe. So with that being said, Sean, why do you think cultural festival or cultural celebration, and I think we shouldn't just limit it to universities, but also should celebrate it even within our communities, within our towns, maybe the way we can be able to have access to diverse people. Why do you think it's very, very important to Namibia's, to Namibians as a whole?
It's important because, first of all, it really does allow you the opportunity to learn about new cultures. For example, in my own culture, or in one half of my culture, is the Khoekhoekhoe Damaranama culture. And today, I learned what the difference between two of the more traditional sub-tribes are. And I learned the difference between the two today. That's something that I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I think that's very indicative of how important these things are, because it gives you a chance to actually learn so much about your own culture, about your own place in your own culture, and other people's cultures. As well as it's important because it just fosters a sense of belonging and unity, where my friend who's someone from the Zambezi region, and I, our cultures may be incredibly different, but we can find meaning in that together, and we can be we can grow a closer bond.
While we're still at that, don't you think there are also certain aspects, I'm thinking that every culture has some positive things that we can take from, and there are also some negative things that we really just have to keep back there and just let go of. We often, when such conversations are coming up, and they often don't really come up, why do people take so much offense instead of actually learning and comparing sometimes in a positive way to see that, hold on, this culture still shatters people in the face, in light of the person will be healed, or those type of things? Why is it very necessary also to just sometimes come on the table and talk about things that we can learn from each other positively, and some of the things that just have to be done away with?
It's so interesting that you mentioned that, because the vice chancellor of the university, Dr. Kenneth Matengu, had a similar comment to make about the issue of conflict resolution within cultural spaces, specifically with regards to the idea of stereotyping. He made a reference to the fact that a lot of Namibians, right, or a lot of us, regardless of where we come from, have an innate way of stereotyping certain groups according to whatever social category we have in our mind. And he made it a point to say that it is important for every single person to be willing to come to the table and to be willing to be corrected, to be willing to listen, because part of the reason why conflict does occur in many different spaces is because of the fact that people are not listening. They're hearing each other, but they're not listening with intentions, with good intent and with good faith. And so part of what was being said by both Honorable Baloti and
Sean
was that you need to be
Sean,
appointed.
Sorry. I'm going to have you to ask you to repeat that again when we do come back from this scheduled commercial break, but stay with us. Don't go anywhere, listeners.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Stock up for August with real value at WB. Get a 2-liter Pepsi now for a sweet $14.99. 750ml WB cooking oil for only $26.99. 1 kg Sunlight hand wash powder for just $36.99. And 50 Hi Baby active diapers at only $124.99. See all our real value deals at www.vurmanbrock.com. We care.
Social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Okay, and we are back. Sean, you were busy telling us about extracting from the speeches of Minister Dino Baloti and Vice Chancellor of UNAM.
Yes, so to further answer your question, they spoke about intentionality when it came to interacting with people of different cultures, because it is important that through that we learn, walking in with a mindset of wanting to learn more and wanting to be humble about the fact that we may not know enough or may not know as much as we think we know is important. And also, it was quite important because Minister Baloti made quite a useful reference to the fact that he too was once a UNAM student. He too had to learn a lot about other cultures that were not accessible to him at the time. He made it a point to also say that it was through events like these where to really, really immerse himself in all of the diversity that Namibia has to offer. So it is quite an important platform for people who may not have the access to it. Like I was even speaking to a few foreign exchange students from Germany, and they were really detailing how different the cultural diversity is, because back home for them you'd only really see one sort of culture or like a similar type of culture represented. So the differences, the cultural dancing, the music, it's so different for them, and they've been fully immersed in that. So
Now imagine for Minister Baloti, a similar example to him, say, of somebody maybe being appointed to be in front of the people and to lead the Namibian people. And Namibia has so many different people with different cultures. And and this person doesn't know what other cultures entail or what other cultures do and do not do. Just imagine that. So him saying that, it's something really worth noting. But while we're at that, let me share something with you that I also want to get your say on it. Now, interestingly, someone very close to me is getting married or wants to get married to somebody who's of another tribe, and she herself, her dad is Kavango and her mom is Vambu, and now she is going to set to get married to somebody who is Damara speaking.
Alright.
And she's very scared on what family would say. And I'm like, is this a thing still now happening right now? I mean, in this day and age, we're still concerned about what people would say. And these are the stereotypes we're talking about. Of course, it's very easy for people to say, no, I include everybody. But when you come to, parents being exclusive of, no, you cannot marry from that tribe, then I think we're not evolving. Don't you think?
I think, you know what it is? I think we haven't done the process of actually decolonizing the mind, because in a lot of ways, that's something that I studied right? Because I, before being a journalist, I was a psychologist, right? So
yeah.
part of what we were studying was the idea behind how we still have remnants of like pre-colonial ideals with us,
mm-hmm.
how even though apartheid and all of these big concepts ended, we still have the imaginary lines that divide us still present within. So it's something that is still prevalent that I could say 100%. Again, another thing that was mentioned in the keynote address was about stereotypes, was about the idea of having negative views on another culture. These are things that are very prevalent in our country because we have so many different ideas about how culture things are supposed to work and. So it's something that's quite prevalent still. It's something that's quite there. And it's something that does need to be squashed. Mm. I will say though that with the younger generation, we have a lot more, we are a lot more willing to be to engage with one another and to really to be connected to one another. I think
that's part of
the healing process, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sean, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radar Analysis and having this conversation with me about how important really culture is. And of course, just being brought to light through the cultural festival happening at UNAM. I sure hope that you enjoy yourself.
All right. You have a good day. Thank you so much.
Okay.
All right.
And you can also be part of the conversation. Now, studio line is open for you to come through and air your opinions and contributions or perhaps even ask questions. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. For now, let's pause right here. When we do return, we shall be telling you about what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipura nengeno wapungwa eva tere urikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite okoye ekukurile oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna e mitota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special ngeza shake ngeshe fa omarudi tayo loka opone ushendike nawa nukumona oijamoiri nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora itatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. Speaking about The Villager newspaper, do you know that you can grab your copy of today's The Villager e-paper? Now, all you have to do is send a text message to, that is a WhatsApp text message, to 081-200-4144. And just like that, you become eligible to receive free
And I can't emphasize it more than that. Free try weekly dose of social and economic news that is every Monday, every Wednesday, and every Friday delivered straight to your mobile. Now, of course, today's edition of the e-paper covers the following headlines. Erongo illegal mining affects copper exploration. IPPR launches report on GERP, that is the Government Employment Readiness Program. Street lights, shortage increases Rondo crime. GRN funds 13 special needs students in Ohangwena. Ben donates $100,000 to support inclusive education at UNAM. Financing Namibia's mining future, unlocking unexpected connections. Cricket Namibia's Ashburton Quarter Program wins global award. Now make sure that you grab your copy so you can read up on those headlines in detail on what it's all about. Now, of course, let's take you into what's making headlines today in terms of the Namibian currency compared to other currencies. Now, starting off with the US dollar. One US dollar today will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 81 cents, while 1 euro will get you 20 Namibian dollars and 68 cents. £1 sterling equals to 23 Namibian dollars and 73 cents. One Australian dollar equals to 11 Namibian dollars and 59 cents, while one Chinese yuan equals to 2 Namibian dollars and 48 cents. And lastly, one Botswana pula will get you 1 Namibian dollar and 32 cents. Now, moving on to trading economics. WTI crude oil futures rose towards $66 per barrel on Wednesday, halting a four-day losing streak and rebounding from a five-week low that is supported by concerns over potential supply disruptions. Now, investors are weighing possible supply shifts as India may reduce Russian oil imports in response to US President Trump's tariff threats over its continued purchases. Now, Trump warned of higher tariffs on Indian goods within 24 hours in an attempt to pressure Russian President Vladimir Putin to end the war in Ukraine. Adding to bullish pressure, API data showed U.S. crude stockpiles fell by 4.2 million barrels last week, surpassing market expectations of a 1.8 million barrel draw and suggesting stronger than anticipated demand. However, gains were capped by oversupply concerns after OPEC Plus recently announced plans to increase oil production by 547,000 barrels per day in September, effectively ending its latest output cuts earlier than expected. U.S. gasoline futures dropped to $2.1 per gallon, reaching its lowest level in 1 week as global supply continues to rise while demand concerns persist. The European stocks panel, European stocks purred most of the early gains on Wednesday, with the stock exchange of 50 inching up 0.2% and the stock exchange of 600 hovering near the flat line by the afternoon. Now, this is as weaknesses in pharmaceutical stocks weighed on sentiments. Meanwhile, Ghana's annual consumer inflation fell further to 12.1% in July 2025, the lowest since October 2021, exceeding its downward trend for the seventh month. Now, the city's ongoing resilience, fueled by rising gold and cocoa prices, played a central role. Food inflation decelerated to 15.1% in July, that is from 16.3% a month earlier. The annual inflation rate in Taiwan rose slightly to 1.54% in July from 1.37% in the previous month, halting a three-month streak of declines but remaining below the central bank's 2% target. The uptick was primarily driven by faster price increases in food at 2.91% versus 2.82% in June, and that is largely due to Typhoon Dana's and heavy rainfall, alongside stronger gains in education and entertainment. And that's what we had for you today in terms of trading economics. Let's pause right here, and when we return, we shall be bringing you what's making headlines outside the borders of Namibia.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Welcome back, and now we take you to news beyond the borders. We start off regionally and then continentally, and then we move over to international news. Now, Free State in South Africa's Agriculture Congress begins today.
Two-day Congress today with farmers, commercial banks and other role players gathering to discuss the future of the sector. The gathering is being held under the theme, Roots of Resilience, Power from the Ground Up, as the organization looks ahead to the next 120 years. For more on this, let's bring in SABC News reporter Mahala Masiteng, who's live to us from Bloemfontein. And Mahala, help us understand who exactly is part of this gathering.
Thank you very much, Ayanda. Yes, a lot of farmers are here. Of course, this is an organization focuses mostly on the commercial farmers, so they are all here, and also various organizations, of course, which are stakeholders in the agriculture industry. But what we have heard, especially coming from some of the farmers, were some of the challenges that they are still faced with, and these are not new issues that we're hearing about in terms of the infrastructure. They are talking about the quality of the roads in the rural areas, that the situation there is not good, and they are also saying that they've been engaging with a government to say that let this road be fixed so that there is a good movement, you know, in the rural areas, not only in terms of the traveling, of course, of the products in the farming area, but also in terms of the safety issue, which is also a very serious problem when it comes to agricultural industry. But for now, I'm going to bring in the CEO of the Agri SA, Johan Kotzie, just to talk about those issues and what is it that they want to see happening, of course, to resolve those issues. You would remember that in the Free State, agriculture is one of the industries that are very important or really contribute a lot in the GDP. Thank you very much, Ndatekotzie, for joining us. Let's talk about these issues. I just highlighted in terms of the quality of roads. What are these worrying challenges that the industry is faced with?
So I think two things they mentioned here at Free State, which is quite important to them, is the stock theft is a big one, and the other one is roads. If you take, say, for instance, the roads, whenever the roads are not in a good condition, your production cost goes up. And eventually somebody needs to pay for it. And so that goes up to a higher price for, say, the produce that we produce. So I think one thing that I've learned is we need to focus on the profitability of what we have, because eventually it feeds into food security. And food security is about people being able to buy food. The second thing on stock theft, I think that's a difficult one, specifically on the border ends of what we have here, and something that needs to have more attention. What I do appreciate is the communities taking part, participate in certain initiatives to kind of safeguard their own concepts from where they are, which is good. And then maybe a third one, which I've also heard at the conference, and I think it's something we need to talk about, is the dialogue from a farmer. Because I think sometimes, I don't know if everybody really understands the world of a farmer. And we have a perception of a farmer, and then reality is sometimes something different. And how do you deal with that? And what I do appreciate about a conference like this is that you have dialogue. That there's dialogue where people talk, and sometimes it's tough. When people say stuff, I would say, oof, was it really necessary to say it in such a way? But it is a dialogue. And what I think out of this conference, what I see is that we need to have more dialogue, so that I think government institutions, bigger businesses, and then farmers, that they have a dialogue to be understood and also understand the challenges that they deal with.
Will there ever be a
Zambia has suspended a copper export tax in order to boost local processing.
As Zambia seeks a 12-month expansion of the International Monetary Fund, IMF Extended Credit Facility, Finance Minister Stumbeko Msokotwane is laying out the benefits of the deal.
Maintenance of confidence that things are going well. This is why we feel that we should extend the program for another 1 year. And the financial support we are looking at is about $145 million. Is something that we can make use of as we go into the next year.
Dr. Msokotwane says domestic debt servicing, mainly fuel arrears, treasury bills and bonds, is consuming a large portion of government revenue.
This domestic debt that has been a problem now constitutes of issues like the arrears that were left behind, mostly by the PF. A few weeks ago, we were talking about the arrears on the fuel and how we are forced to restructure the budget of 2025 to accommodate the payment of the arrears.
He has also defended government's decision to suspend export tax on copper concentrates, saying it is a strategic move to safeguard the mining sector and the broader economy.
For a couple of months, the copper exports have been going down. Why? Because the mining companies had concentrate. There was a tax, but they could not smelt. So the copper concentrate was spiking. Therefore, copper exports went down. When the copper export went down, the foreign exchange earnings also suffer. When the copper exports go down, the mineral royalty tax, that tax where you are charged a tax for producing. The moment you produce a mineral and export it, mineral royalty tax kicks in.
And Zambia Revenue Authority, ZRA Commissioner General Dingani Banda, has reviewed the revenue trends from copper concentrate exports.
We collected 100 million in export duty. And for the first half of 2025, that's from January to June, we've collected 86.6 million kwacha in export duty.
Meanwhile, Zambia Chamber of Mines Chief Executive Officer Sokwani Chilembo has welcomed the move, saying the suspension of export tax is a positive response to the industry's long-standing appeal.
We made that request. We are very grateful it was granted. It's in the interest, the national interest, that it happened.
The export tax has been suspended for 3 months, aimed at boosting production and investment in the sector. Mary Kachepa, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Meanwhile, for Risotto, 15% tariff down from 50% and earlier from 100% could still mean disaster.
Donald Trump has threatened to impose a 50% tariff rate on tiny Lesotho, potentially decimating the textile industry on which the landlocked mountainous kingdom depends. So you might think that last week's decision to significantly lower that rate to 15% would be met with a sigh of relief. Instead, Lesotho's trade minister warns it might still not be enough to avoid a disaster.
For me, it's still like 50%, because our people in the garment industry will not compete.
Moketi Shilile pointed to competition from Eswatini and Kenya, both of whom have lower US tariff rates at 10%.
And they are both in the same market as us. And it will be quite easy for the buyers to switch their allegiance to these two countries and place orders in these two countries.
The textile industry is Lesotho's biggest private employer and responsible for roughly 90% of manufacturing exports. It was also heavily dependent on the African Growth and Opportunities Act, or AGOA, which offered qualifying African nations duty-free access to the US market. However, under the tariff threats, many US importers have cancelled orders of Lesotho-produced textiles. Shilile said there are close to 12,000 jobs directly in the firing line and another 40,000 that depend on those 12,000. At a market in Lesotho's capital, Maseru, clothing vendor Hobolang Lebamang fears for his future. The knock-on effects of the tariffs will mean he has to inflate his prices, he says, and that will make them unaffordable for his clients. Lesotho's textile factories have in recent months indicated that they were searching for new markets. Shilile also said his government would continue to engage with the White House in the hope of having the tariff lowered.
Rwanda agrees to take U.S. deportees under new migration deal.
Ethan Tashobia is joining us live from Kigali in Rwanda. Ethan, so what's the latest update on the migrants deal between Rwanda and the U.S. and why has Rwanda agreed to this deal?
Which is, I think, one of the most surprising elements in this new development is the fact that the deal was signed in June, weeks ago. That's what has surprised most of the analysts here that I spoke to earlier. What we know is that the vetting is already ongoing for the 10 first individuals that will be sent to Rwanda by the U.S. authorities. If that goes on and the vetting is successful, they should be coming to Rwanda in the next few weeks, according to the officials we spoke to earlier today. Now, what remains to be seen is if there will be the next batch of these migrants will be coming. That's the 240, or they will be coming in phases, and that's not something that they're sure about at this particular moment. But what we're sure of, and what we've been told, they did not specify the dates, but they are sure that the first group of 10 individuals that are being vetted currently will be coming in the next weeks. That's what the officials mentioned to us earlier on.
And Ethan, what exactly do we know about the status of these migrants that are being sent to Rwanda?
So what we know at this moment is that these are the people whose asylum claims were rejected by the U.S. and the U.S. authorities decided to send them to the third receiving countries, which is Rwanda at this particular moment. We also know that some of them are convicted criminals with varying cases, of course. But what we do not know is the magnitude of the cases with which they were convicted on. And that's actually some of the things that have raised concerns here among analysts or why Rwanda is willing to receive convicted criminals. We spoke to some officials, especially on the opposition and the analysts, and saying that Rwanda should not be receiving such individuals because they may pose a threat to the Rwandan security and safety. But those concerns were also addressed, saying that Rwanda will make sure that they vet each individual case by case and make sure that the person who will be received in Rwanda is safe to be received, rehabilitated, and reintegrated into the Rwandan community.
And Rwanda has made other migrant deals before, most recently with the United Kingdom. Tell us about some of these and their current status in Rwanda.
Rwanda, in general, has hosts over 100,000 migrants and asylum seekers from different countries, from the neighboring DRC, from Burundi, from as far as Afghanistan and Israel, as well as people who, there was a deal that was fell apart, the 2022 deal with the UK. Rwanda has intentionally put itself forward to receive people who are in need of asylum and refugees because the authorities here believe that Rwandans fully understand the plight and the suffering of the migrants and asylum seekers due to the history of this nation, where, you know, most people from as far as 1959 were Rwandans who were, you know, forced to flee the country and went to different parts of the world. So the current authorities believe that offering such asylum and asylum to those who are in need is sort of offering a pathway to those, a decent pathway to those that are in need of asylum and refugee and resettlement. So,
Kenyan tech founder empowers girls through coding.
Iria Jafar wants to build a career in the tech space. She's joined this training session in Accra to develop her skills in information technology.
I just love computer-related stuff, and today we learned about coding, using some code and language to program a software.
Across the world, women hold only 26% of computing jobs. In Ghana, the figure is even lower. Women are engaged in 18% of tech-related jobs, according to industry experts. And it's largely because science and technology career fields are often seen as the preserve of men.
And a lot of the females don't have people to look up to. It's difficult to find someone to say, this is someone who is in tech, this is someone I look up to, this is someone I want to be like, right? And so I feel we have to get to a point where we create role models for upcoming children or children who are now like growing very early on.
Zulaiha Dobia Abdallah founded the social enterprise Developer 6 years ago to empower women and young girls in information technology. She hopes to bridge the gender gap in tech by training 1 million young girls and women by 2030.
If you look at how the world is moving now, you do realize that there's always a new innovation that comes up. I mean, with the new dawn of blockchain, artificial intelligence, machine learning, and etc., you can see that a lot of things are moving from manual processes to a more digital process. And so it's very important that we, as part of the youth in Africa, try to expand and then learn some of these technologies so that we can add it to problem solving in our various communities.
Facilitators believe that it is crucial to start early with young girls.
For me, the training was fun, and what I learned was like programming things using like JavaScript, Python, those kind of languages.
Ghana is mainstreaming ICT and coding into the national education curriculum to get more girls to be interested in technology fields. Industry experts want more funding to go into the sector, especially targeting social enterprises trying to train girls in science and technology.
These young women believe the skills they are learning here could be the key to a future in high-paying, flexible tech jobs, from software engineering to cybersecurity and app development.
After this initial training, Iria Jafar and the other young women here can sign up for a 3-month boot camp to continue developing their skills and careers. Nabil Ahmed Rufai, CGTN, Accra, Ghana.
Tibetan entrepreneur leads eco-revolution in remote China.
Grasslands of northern Xizang, the site is familiar. Piles of dried yak dung stack along walls, used as fuel for cooking and surviving long, frigid winters. But to one young man, this isn't waste, it's untapped potential.
This is what pastures at 5,000 meters above sea level look like. Absolutely breathtaking. Most people just stop here for photos, but not us. We are here to collect yak dung.
Sir Minjo launched his business in 2017 by doing something few imagined, collecting livestock waste across the plateau and turning it into organic fertilizer.
The first challenge was technical. I didn't know how to ferment or process it into fertilizer. The second was tradition. Many elders saw dung as a blessing. Asking to buy it felt like asking to take away their good fortune.
He went door to door, explaining how selling the dung could generate income without losing that sense of connection to the land. Today, over 20 collection stations across Nachu form part of his network. Some herding families can earn between $1,400 to $2,000 a year just from selling dung. Many who once hesitated now call him directly, asking him to come and collect it.
Times have changed. Since he built the factory, we can sell our yak and sheep dung. It brings an extra income, and now we eagerly await his arrival.
Minjo's growing business has also created dozens of local jobs, from collection site managers to drivers and factory workers.
The factory covers 13,000 square meters. This spring, we collected over 4,000 cubic meters of yak and sheep dung in total. Right now, we're working with the Chinese Academy of Environmental Sciences to experiment with new fertilizer formulas.
Born raised on the plateau.
OpenAI sees $500 billion value in potential share sale.
OpenAI is in early stage talks about a potential share sale that could value it at $500 billion. That's according to a Reuters source. The number would represent a big leap from its current valuation, which is put at $300 billion. It would also underscore the firm's rapid gains in users and sales. Sam Altman's outfit is now on track to hit an annual revenue rate of $20 billion by year end. It claims about 700 million active weekly users for its flagship ChatGPT products, not far off double the number in February. The source says the deal would precede any full IPO. It would reportedly be structured to allow employees to cash out billions of dollars in shares. That could offer financial incentives to staffers amid fierce competition for the top AI talent. Facebook parent Meta, for one, has been spending big to recruit leading players in the sector as it tries to catch rivals. The share sale would come hot on the heels of a $40 billion fundraising round led by Japanese tech investor SoftBank. OpenAI is also working on a restructuring that would move it away from its current capped profit model and open the way for an IPO.
Investors cheer Diageo's flat results in tough spirits market.
Diageo reassured investors on Tuesday by reporting a smaller than expected fall in annual profit. That's despite raising their estimate of a tariff impact for the year to $200 million. The world's top spirits maker also said it expected to have a permanent new CEO by October, after a surprise exit from former leader Deborah Crew. Shares rose almost 7% in early trade before scaling back. The Guinness.
Meanwhile, Ethiopian Airlines soars to $7.6 billion US revenue.
Africa's biggest airline is soaring even higher thanks to its increased passenger numbers and earnings. It's had another successful financial year. At a media briefing in Addis Ababa, Ethiopian Airlines Group Chief Executive Officer said the state-owned carrier has remained profitable and resilient despite global economic uncertainties, rising fuel costs, and shifting travel demands.
In the year just ended, we generated a total revenue of $7.6 billion. But when it comes to profit, we don't want to disclose it before our financial books are audited. When the audit is completed, it will be officially communicated. But I can tell you that the profit that we earned in the year just ended is higher than what we earned before 1 year.
As the public awaits the release of those audited profit figures, the airline is signaling solid year-over-year growth driven in large part by an expanding international network, especially in Asia. China, in particular, remains a central pillar of Ethiopian Airlines' long-term strategy, both for passenger and cargo operations.
China, for sure, is one of biggest markets for Ethiopian Airlines. China is a superhouse in commodities. And China has a big relationship with African countries. Because of this, Ethiopian Airlines is functioning as a bridge between Africa and China. At this time, we are flying to four, including Hong Kong, five cities for passenger operation. And for cargo operation, we fly to nearly nine cities in China.
But beyond air travel, the airline is positioning itself as an aviation pillar within China's Belt and Road Initiative, fostering deeper economic ties between Africa and China.
It facilitates the business relationship between the two regions. And Ethiopian Airlines is here to support this initiative, particularly on the aviation domain. So we are very, very happy to be part of this development, and we fully support the Road and Belt Initiative.
However, the CEO admitted that multiple regional and global crises, including conflicts in the Middle East, Sudan, Ukraine, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, have adversely affected the operations of the airline. He also cited U.S. government regulations as a growing challenge to air transport services. After yet another solid performance in its business, Ethiopian Airlines is looking forward to better days ahead as it continues to scale greater heights in the challenging but promising aviation industry. David Mbithi, CGTN.
Benjamin Netanyahu is set to propose a full reoccupation of Gaza, Israeli media reports.
Well, let's get more now on our main story. That reported Israeli government plan to occupy the whole of Gaza. We can talk to our Middle East correspondent, Yolan Nell, who's in Jerusalem. Yolan, what has the reaction been?
Well, I mean, this seems to go, of course, against much of world opinion, but also against much of domestic opinion, too, because you have, according to polls, 3 in 4 Israelis who support a ceasefire deal to bring the hostages home. And there is real fear about what this could mean for the hostages, because what it would involve is the Israeli military going into areas that it doesn't currently control. It currently controls about 75% of the Gaza Strip. So it would go into parts of Gaza City, we're told, into parts of the center of Gaza. Those are places where hostages are believed to be held. And so hostage families have been speaking against this, and Israeli military leaders have been coming out against it as well. Now, Palestinians have also denounced this idea, and they point to the fact that, of course, you do have far-right ministers in the Israeli government who call openly for the re-establishment of settlements in Gaza and a permanent occupation, an annexation even, of Gaza.
The UN Security Council is meeting later, Yoland. What will they be focusing on?
So that is a session that has been called by the Israelis with backing from the US and Panama, actually, really to focus on this issue of the remaining captives in Gaza and their condition. This after we had these really shocking videos that came out last week that showed two of the remaining living hostages, Eviatar David and Rom Polansky, who were really, you know, looking pale, looking emaciated. Their families have called for much more to be done to highlight their cases and to bring them back, to urgently get them the food and medicines that they need.
Gaza itself, Yolanda, what is the latest from there? One report from the Israeli military agency, COGAT, that it will start to allow a controlled entry of goods into Gaza.
Yeah, of course, the situation on the ground in Gaza remains dire, and we've got these reports of dozens of people who've been killed and wounded by Israeli strikes, by gunfire in the past day. Some of those while seeking aid, people have been describing, you know, the desperate scrambles to get food from those airdrops. So against that backdrop, with the Israeli authorities saying that they will start to expand the aid that's allowed in, we've also got them saying that they will allow Gazan merchants to resume their imports into Gaza. This is something that's been effective in the past, but this route for goods getting in was closed off about a year ago because the Israeli authorities said that they were worried that it was being taken advantage of by Hamas. Now they say they've come up with a new mechanism to get supplies in, and that could involve things like baby food, fresh fruits and vegetables, and hygiene supplies, things that are desperately needed by people on the ground. One of the reasons that this is a more effective way of getting aid in is often the local merchants will do something that the UN and its partners are not ready to do, which is to use armed guards, local people, guarding their convoys, bringing them in to ensure that they reach the warehouses and are not looted.
Okay, and we have come to the conclusion of today's On The Radar analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now, should you be interested in being a faithful follower or partaker of this news analysis, make sure that you tune in every Monday to Friday, that is weekdays, from 1300 hours up until 1430. You know, I do hand over the mic to Loisa Shimi as she brings you the Onkonana Dinge program, that is our news program in Oshiwambo. The Home Run Show from 1630 with Dwight and Helmut will keep you company. And then don't forget to tune in to the business economic segment with David Shombe from 1600 hours. Now from Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful day ahead.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
no matter where you are, if you have a mobile device,
You can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the
experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha, utekirwa kaguna, iimatina, omjo. Chikawa shafata na nana, nongeshifa, iae, shiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao, ota ingongoti samwene. Anangeshifa, iya Namibia, ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Zeitha nina omayakudo nirandithoma yoe, yongeshifa yoe okupipira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwepo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma onarahi tatu imu. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano oni aji. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one.